The Fargo Public Library presents their Fall into Jazz concerts featuring local jazz artists, Sundays, October 6th through the 27th, starting at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Main Library. More information at fargolibrary.org.
Welcome to this Thursday evening edition of Main Street. I'm Craig Blumenschein. Coming up a bit later in the show, Mark Watney, the president of North Dakota Farmers Union, stops by and chats about the business model that supports several restaurants owned by Farmers Union. We'll review the new movie, Saturday Night, with Matt Olean. I'm looking forward to that one. And Dave Thompson gives us a news summary, plus Fargo North senior Kenzie Olson stops by, and she'll give us insight to the Fargo Youth Initiative. But first, Jesse Veeder joins us in the Main Street studio to remember a legendary singer-songwriter.
John Prine was an American singer-songwriter known for his deeply poignant and often humorous folk and country music. On November 3rd at the Fargo Theater, the Radio Stars will gather some of North Dakota's most talented musicians from Watford City to the Red River Valley for a special tribute to the legendary John Prine. And with me to discuss the event is Jesse Veeder. She's a North Dakota-based singer-songwriter and musician known for her work that reflects her rural lifestyle and landscape of the Midwest, particularly the North Dakota Badlands. It's great to visit with you, Jesse. You've been a guest of ours before here on Main Street. We just love visiting with you. Who was John Prine?
Well, John Prine is a legend in our neck of the woods, that's for sure. To me, John Prine was the kind of godfather of songwriting and the voice of rural America to me. I grew up listening to him because my dad was playing his music and playing his music on his guitar. But to the rest of the world, I think he was one of the most influential songwriters of his generation. He's someone that has spanned generations of influence, and he's still influencing singer-songwriters like me and younger generations today. He's an Americana artist, a folk musician, just that tells, you know, just creates imagery and tells the truth. And I don't even know how you describe Prine. If you were to describe him, how you would describe him if to someone who doesn't know him.
The event will be on November 3rd at the Fargo Theater. It starts at 2:00. How did this idea of the North Dakota All-Star tribute to John Prine come about, Jesse?
Well, I've been in touch with Merrill Pepcorn and have worked with him on different tribute projects throughout the years. He's connected very well to local musicians and North Dakota musicians. He has done a Johnny Cash tribute. I did a Woodstock tribute with him. So we've been talking about this for a long time. I think it's just a natural thing that all of us North Dakota musicians would want to gather on the stage and sing our favorite Prine songs, and I know there's going to be a great many other North Dakotans that want to come and sing along. So it's really Merrill's kind of brainchild to do these tribute concerts, and they always are so beautifully done and well executed and produced, and I just am happy to be along for the ride and to share the stage with these great musicians.
Who's going to be with you on stage?
Well, I'm bringing my dad, actually, and I think it's just perfect. Dad and I have played music together since I was just a really little kid, and he and I have been singing John Prine songs since I was just a little kid. In fact, I have a funny story about going to a John Prine concert for the first time when I was away at college at UND, and he was at the Chester Fritz Auditorium, and Dad said, "You need to go to this concert." And I sat down, I was probably the youngest one in the whole auditorium, and I just started bawling because this man was singing all of the songs that I knew, but I hadn't really connected that they all came from the same man. They just were songs Dad would sing. And I was so homesick and so lonesome. And it was just like, oh, I'm connecting the dots now. You know, that was a time before you could just Google anything and play anything on YouTube. I was listening to records and learning songs from Dad. So I love that we're going to sing together.
So is John Prine, because honestly, I don't know that I've heard his music. At least I don't recall it. Is he a great storyteller, Jesse, in his singing?
It's imagery and storytelling, and it's for me, it was the idea that he could take the stories of the Midwestern or the middle-class working community, for example, and create little nuanced love stories or little characters in the imagery that he portrayed in his music, and just would simply create the most simple chord progression or the simple structure of words put together and then just like pull at your guts and your heartstrings. I remember listening to my dad sing Paradise about a coal company basically flattening, you know, this landscape, flattening this town and taking away the heart of this town. And I didn't know even really what the song was about when I was growing up, other than I just knew it tore me to pieces and I would cry every time Dad would sing it. And we'll sing it at the tribute. Of course, Paradise is one of his most famous songs, and I sing it at every set with my dad. But definitely a storyteller, a folk musician extraordinaire, the definition of it. And anyone that has aspired to songwriting or Americana music would probably list him as at least one of their influences.
We're going to have you play one of John Prine's songs here in just a moment, Jesse, but why is it important to honor his legacy? Why is it important that you go up on stage to do that?
That's a great question. I think, why is it important to honor anyone who has touched so many lives? And I think it's because we want his legacy to carry on. I recorded a John Prine song in one of my albums called Playing Favorites. And I think the reason I did it is maybe the answer to your question. I wanted my girls to hear his music and the way that it sounded out of my voice, out of Dad's voice, why it connected to us. If we can sing those songs to our kids or to an audience, they speak to us so much. Everyone has a favorite John Prine song, and we want to sing it, and we want people to sing along. And that's what music is about, is connecting and relating to one another. And John Prine did that so magically. It felt like he was telling your story. And as musicians and writers, that's what we want, is that connection. And he's the master of it. So we need to celebrate that and pass it along.
Jesse, you've recorded Summers and Forests. What's the song about?
Well, I suppose you would have to ask Prime that question, but Summer's End was on his very last record in 2018 from the Tree of Forgiveness, and it was a long-awaited album and a body of work that everyone just kind of sobbed over after we lost him in 2020. And I feel like Summer's End was kind of a song, maybe that was his parting song. It's about the change of seasons, and if you listen to the first line, the change of seasons in life as well as in this turning over from summer to fall. And he has a line that just grabs you right in the beginning of the song about the swimming suits on the line drying, and it just puts you in a place and he takes it from there. And I absolutely fell in love with this song because we've all been there when a relationship ends or we're missing somebody, and he just equates it to this change in season so well. So I wanted to try this out, and it will be the first time I've ever performed this particular Prine song live. So.
Summer's ends around the bend, just flying. Swimming suits are on the line, just trying. Meet you there for our conversation. I hope I didn't ruin your whole vacation. Well, you never know how far from home you're feeling until you watch the shadows cross the ceiling. Well, I don't know, but I can see it snowing in your car. The windows are wide open. So come on home, come on home. You don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Valentine's break hearts and minds at random. That old Easter egg ain't got a leg to stand on. Well, I see that you can't win for trying. And New Year's Eve is bound to leave you crying. So come on home. Come on. come on home. You don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Out in bars just talking. And I still love that picture of us walking. Just like that old house we thought was haunted. Summer's end came faster than you wanted. So come on home. Come on home. You don't have to be alone. Just come on home. Come on home. No, you don't have to be alone. Come on home.
The event is November 3rd. The radio stars will gather and they'll honor John Prine at the Fargo Theater. The event begins at 2 p.m. Tickets are either $25 or $40, depending on what you would like to choose. Jesse Veeder, thank you so much for joining us here on Main Street.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to talk Prine all day.
I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
You're listening to Prairie Public right now, so I bet you're a bit of a news junkie, right? But do you also like music? Well, I bet you do. Prairie Public is the place for that, too. Did you know that we have a guy named Mike Olson who spins adult album alternative music during the week?
And there goes the last DJ who plays what he wants to play.
He's got an endless library, limitless musical knowledge, and a clever way of handcrafting sets of songs. You can listen to Prairie Public's Roots Rock and Jazz stream on an app or a smart speaker pretty much anywhere, and on an HD radio anywhere in the region. Check out Mike Olson on Prairie Public weekdays from 9 a.m. to 10 and noon to 6 p.m.
I like bagels.
All I eat is pizza.
Eat some barbecue.
Apple sauce and some nice red beets.
And there's our walk-up music, but it's an odd day. It's Thursday. Normally we have Prairie Plates with Rick Guillon on Wednesdays, but we've skewed it a little bit just because of the debates that we've had this week. But Rick, it's good to hear your voice again. How are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. How are you?
I am doing very well. You have a special guest in the Main Street studio, Mark Watney. He's the president of the North Dakota Farmers Union. Rick, why don't you make the introduction here?
Well, Mark's been president of North Dakota Farmers Union for quite a while now. How many years?
11 years.
Wow. The North Dakota Farmers Union has 50,000 member families in North Dakota.
We've actually, with the rules within National Farmers Union, we've gotten over 70,000 members, which is a family membership. So.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah. Mark, give us a 30,000-foot flyover, if you will, of these grand North Dakota farms on what the North Dakota Farmers Union is.
Well, it's our job to represent family farmers and to try to enhance their way of life, their living in the communities they live in. And so we do it through legislation and advocacy. We do youth education, adult education. And then, of course, we support the cooperative business model. And that's our kind of our three peers that we work on to achieve the results of promoting family farm and ranch agriculture.
Now, Rick has brought you here because the NDFU also owns several restaurants. Tell us about those.
Well, we do. We have right now 7 restaurants that are operating. 6 of them are in what we call the D.C. proper area. They're not all in D.C., but around there within probably about a 30-mile diameter. And we have one up by Philadelphia, which is in the King of Prussia suburb. And we're actually building number 8 in Alexandria, Virginia, which will probably open somewhere around the 1st of February. So expanding a little bit now that COVID's over.
That's really exciting news.
It is, Mark. Yeah. What's the purpose of the restaurants, Mark? What do those do for the Farmers Union?
Well, we, many years ago, were part of these value-added projects, and some of them were successful and some of them weren't. And we quickly learned that when we're taking a commodity and converting it into another commodity, there still isn't much margin. So farmers thought, well, okay, if we're going to move up the food chain and integrate ourselves up closer to the consumer, we have to have some outlets. We have to have a way to connect, and hopefully we can own the whole system. So that's what we did. We finally decided to go right to the restaurants because it's right in the consumer's face. We try to do 90% U.S. family farm source food. And then, of course, the people that own part of that system or can deliver product to that can reap some of the rewards of the profitability of the restaurant and the ability to sell some of their products to the restaurants.
So, Craig, I just wanted to ask Mark a little bit about what's the tie-in with North Dakota producers with these restaurants?
So right now from North Dakota, we're hauling with two trucks that we have. We have actually a trucking business we started, and we're hauling flour and sugar. We haul some wheat. We haul some bacon, some pork products, sausage. We haul honey. And surprisingly, we can pick up grits on the way. We pick up some cheese in places. We pick up some cream cheese once in a while. And just things we do that the trucking system works. And we're finding that we're a little bit more efficient in our hauling. If we can get, you know, full loads and some backhauls, we can do it cheaper than the normal systems, which is kind of another benefit to the restaurants and to the owners.
Mark, wow. If I give you my address, can you make those trucks just stop by my place? That all sounds really, really good.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny because we've been working on a system back here of bringing products back, because what would be better than a truck that delivers fresh seafood maybe once a month,
or yes,
products from the restaurants that we make that can be shipped? We make chocolate. We do our own coffee roasting. We've had just a minimal amount of luck with that yet, but hopefully someday we'll develop that. And if we can get a system where people can order, we can make that whole thing work together very well.
You know the address to Prairie Public now.
I do now, yes. I actually knew it before, but I do now.
What are the biggest challenges that you perceive that North Dakota farmers are up against?
Well, we're commodity producers, and it's been one of these things that Farmers Union's identified, and many others have too, that we should quit exporting things out of North Dakota as a simple commodity. The commodity market is never real rewarding. It takes quite a bit of either weather disasters or some brand new huge demand like ethanol, or hopefully in the future here, renewable diesel and renewable jet fuel. If those things all come, that creates demand and we see price increases. But that doesn't happen often, so we got to find a way that farmers can take some of that crop they're producing and turn it into something more with a little bit of their ownership, so they can extract another income stream without having to add more work to themselves as much. And so that's the real challenge. The market doesn't always reward. There's a desire in this country to have an abundant, inexpensive food system, and that really doesn't bode well for the market ever really being short of product, which would drive prices up. So you kind of got a catch 22. You got a bunch of people who want cheap food. You want a lot of production, and that lot of production, of course, makes your prices go down. So that's why we need farm programs. That's why we need all these things to make it work. But that's the challenge. Selling a commodity is really hard, and really hard to be that efficient where you can keep going.
I always see these charts from Farmers Union where it's the farmer's cut of this and the farmer's cut of that, and you look at it and you're really disappointed because out of this $6 loaf of bread or whatever, the farmer's cut is, I don't know, 50 cents or something like that. So this pretty much farm-to-table sort of system, almost vertically integrated, really helps out with that, it seems.
And that's just exactly right. We've got to find a mechanism to make that function, and we can help the consumer. Because when you do break that dollar down, you know, it ends up being somewhere around 10 cents or less that goes to the farmer based on what food item it is. And in the retail side, it's not really grocery stores. They're not making a lot, maybe 10, 15, 20%. So there's a whole lot of stuff in between the farmer and that retail outlet. And it's not that they shouldn't make money, but we can find a way of sharing that more with the farmer. That's a good thing. And you can see that with the inflationary period. What happened with beef was simply wrong. The rancher wasn't getting paid. The customer was paying too much. And we have four companies that own that system, and they were making record profits. There's something wrong with that system. We got to figure it out.
What's your takeaway from this year's harvest, Mark? Things are wrapping up or have just wrapped up. And it seems to me, just from the layman, that it may have been a great, great year for the harvest for the farmer.
Yeah, I think it was generally, I would say probably 80-90% of the state's pretty happy. There's some pockets that dried up, and then, of course, northeast, I believe they had a little bit too much moisture. Somewhere north of Jamestown, all the way up to Devil's Lake, was a little tough with drowned out. So, you know, you always have a few of those problems, but it really did come through. The corn's being harvested now, and I'm hearing really good positives, and there was a lot of concern the corn wasn't going to finish, and of course, we got a really nice September to make that happen. So I would say generally good. Price is low, though, and we don't have the farm bill. Hopefully we would get something passed in this lame duck session coming up, but I'm not sure. You know, we've been pushing. We're almost on a starting a second-year extension. That's not a good thing because with low prices, you want some certainty in knowing what the farm bill will represent and being able to go to the bank with that information.
Rick, after this discussion, are you going to take Mark around Fargo and figure out where his next restaurant's going to open up right here?
Right in between Prairie Public and my apartment, which is about three blocks away. So,
you know, there's been a lot of people that have talked to me about that, and the hard part of it is that our restaurants are really designed for high traffic patterns, and you know, when we can locate where there's, you know, nearly a million people within a couple miles compared to, I don't know what the popper here is, maybe 250,000 in the area now. It's not that we don't want to come here, but it's not probably the first on the list. Plus, the good news is we're getting so popular that landlords are coming to us. So there's probably 50 landlords courting us to come to them. And that generates usually money to help us do the build.
Well, maybe John Harris can put a restaurant in this Prairie Public building on the main level. I don't know.
Hey, we're doing some remodeling right now, recovering from the fire that we had. So, hey, let's plan for that. That sounds a great idea to me.
Mark, what is your favorite dish or some of those dishes that you really think are very good at some of these restaurants? Anything stand out?
Yeah, there's a few things that stand out for me. I basically order the same thing when I go to the different restaurants. So at the Farmers, Fishers, and Bakers, I usually do the clam chowder and I do a spicy tuna roll. When I go to Farmers and Distillers, I tend to eat the pasta there. It seems to be best. Plus, they have some really good stir-fried rice that they're next to Chinatown, so they do a little bit of Chinese cuisine there. And then at Founding Farmers, you got to do the mac and cheese or the chicken and waffles. So, and I could tell you the others, but it, you know, there's just so many good things. And you know, everything's made from scratch at these places. That's what we really do well. And even when you get a mixed drink, it's got fresh squeezed juice. There's nothing from a bottle that's not pre-made or made. Other than, well, even the alcohol, we make our own alcohol. So.
Wow.
Mark Watney, it's been a pleasure. You have a long history with Farmers Union. Clear to what you're doing today, which is president of the North Dakota Farmers Union. It's been a pleasure, Mark.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for what you do. I appreciate it.
Coming up, the Fargo Youth Initiative is hosting Impact Fargo for local high school students. Matt Olean reviews the movie Saturday Night, and Dave Thompson reviews the news. That's after this. And with that fanfare, that means it's time to go to the movies with Matt Olean, our reviewer here on Main Street at Prairie Public. Matt, how are you?
I'm okay, Craig.
Matt, you know that I have been waiting a very long time for you to review the movie that we're going to talk about today, and that's Saturday Night. Let's play the trailer, and then we'll come back and talk about the film.
Hey, free comedy show, plenty of seats. Plenty of tickets left, guys. Free show. Sake.
So, big night.
Look, my name is Lorne Michaels. I'm the producer of Saturday Night.
The whole night?
Yeah, the whole night.
Chevy Chase, Gilda Radner, Dan Aiko. How the f*** do you pronounce this?
Aykroyd.
You know, I was thinking, why don't we punt? We should run the dress rehearsal and claw back a win next Saturday.
We can't, Dick. It's a live show.
We're just not ready.
Doesn't matter that we're ready. It matters that it's 11:30. That's when we go on.
Lauren, all I'm trying to do is give you advice. It's in everyone's best interest, mainly yours.
Sorry, was that a threat?
Look around, Lauren. You haven't locked the script. Your crew is in open rebellion.
F*** you! F*** you!
I definitely f***
you.
The writers on the 17th floor tied a belt around Big Bird's neck and hung him from my dressing room door.
So tell how you fit into this ensemble.
Oh, is this an ensemble?
NBC makes more money playing reruns of The Tonight Show. NBC is lucky to have something as relevant as this show.
Lauren, they don't even want it.
That's logical, Vic. That's why they're paying us all to be here. I mean, Lauren, 90 minutes of live television by a group of 20-year-olds who've never made anything. Do you ever stop and wonder why they said yes? A counterculture show starring total unknowns with zero narrative and even less structure.
All right, Matt, we've seen the trailer. First of all, I have to ask you, did you love it?
Liked it. Didn't quite love it, but I highly recommend it. And I think it's got some Oscar legs because of the subject matter, I would say. So Jason Reitman's the director. He was an Oscar nominee for Up in the Air and Juno back when. Son of Ivan Reitman, who knew a lot of the SNL people, of course. And Gil Keenan and Reitman wrote the screenplay. Now, this is based on interviews with the original cast members about what that first night was like in October of 1975, getting it on the air. It was kind of a replacement show, so they wouldn't have to run Johnny Carson reruns on Saturday night. I did like the movie. The casting makes it. So Gabriel LaBelle plays Lorne Michaels. He is ostensibly the main character. The film takes place in real time, Craig, from 90 minutes out till the show starts. So it's about a 90-minute movie, and it's kind of covering that 9 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Central Time as they get ready to run the show, okay? Backstage, yeah. Hectic stuff, things going on, maybe too many things going on. I'm going to get to that in a minute. LaBelle, who played the Steven Spielberg character in The Fablemans, might be a little too young to play Lorne Michaels. He's 21 years old in real life. You kind of get that sense a little bit. I did. He's fine in the part. He's the lead character. He's trying to hold it all together. He's trying to make sure John Belushi signs his contract, which he has not done yet. He's trying to stop a fight between Chevy Chase and John Belushi, who allegedly did not get along in real life. He's trying to keep it all together. George Carlin's the host. We have Janice Ian and Billy Preston as the music guests. So there's a lot of really famous people portrayed in this movie, and some knowledge of that does help, I will say. For younger people who might not know some of these people, you might want to study up a little bit. I think what makes the movie is the frenetic pace, right? It's real time. Is the show going to get on the air? There's pushback from NBC, a big shot play by Willem Dafoe, is concerned about the words being used. He's concerned what kind of a show this is. There's a standards and practices lady who clashes with them on, you know, what things like golden shower mean. And they
probably
try to,
everything.
They try to tell her it's something different than what it really means, things like this. But the casting makes it. And let me just say that whoever they found to play these characters, they nailed it. Corey Michael Smith plays Chevy Chase. Perfect. Matt Wood plays John Belushi. Looks just like him. Dylan O'Brien plays Dan Aykroyd. Amazing. And you really get a sense for Aykroyd's gift in sketch comedy in this film as well, which is what he was really good at, is portraying characters like Richard Nixon. And Lamorne Morris's Garrett Morris is kind of a standout. Just like the original SNL, I do want to point out, and this was a criticism of the old SNL, the women tend to be background characters. So the actors, the actresses playing Jane Curtin, Gilda Radner, Lorraine Newman, are definitely more background characters than the men. And if you remember, Craig, the breakout stars of Saturday Night Live were Chevy Chase in the first season and then Belushi and Aykroyd. And so I just want to make comment that, again, I think women are given a little short shrift in this movie. Not a criticism, I'm just making a comment, and that's very typical of what happened when SNL came on the air. I will say this, here's my criticism. First, I want to say the best cameo in the movie is J.K. Simmons, who shows up as Milton Berle. That has to be seen to believe. That cameo, I'm just going to leave it there. I'm not going to say anything else. It's an amazing imitation that Simmons does of Milton Berle hanging out at NBC that night. What I had a problem with is there's things going on 90 minutes away from the show that I cannot believe were going on. There's lights falling down. Lorne Michaels hires two writers off the street within 90 minutes to come and work on the film. It seems like some liberties are being taken here by Reitman and Keenan that maybe did not happen. It's hard to believe there was this much chaos with 90 minutes to go. Maybe it was. I think some liberties were taken here. It just feels like they're pushing it a little bit. And I understand artistic liberty. But I also think if they'd have stuck to what really maybe did happen or didn't happen, it still would have been a good movie. That's my criticism. I'm a stickler for detail. I'm a stickler for realism. And some of the things happening, like hiring a writer across the street in a bar with 20 minutes to go before the show, I can't believe Lorne Michaels really did that. So that's my only criticism.
Do we know to what extent Lorne Michaels approved of this, supported this, helped with it?
I did not look that up, Craig, so I cannot comment. I'm not sure about that. I do know that Keenan and Reitman did interview cast members at the time. So I think some of it is for sure spot on. It just felt like it was a little over the top in terms of, is this show going to get on the air? Is it not going to get on the air? But overall, I like the movie, and it is entertaining. It does not, it will never, you'll never be bored watching this movie.
I also wondered if Lorne Michaels was really out hawking tickets, saying free tickets.
That
free
could tickets. Be. That could very well be. There's, I've watched so many movies, I can kind of tell when I'm being snowed a little bit. Going across the street to a bar to hire a writer that he sees in a comedy store 20 minutes away, can't believe that quite happened. But again, what makes the movie is the casting of the supporting characters.
Was there any historical footage in the film, Matt?
Nope, none. They really leave that to your imagination, even with the closing credits. I was expecting to see, you know, more real photos of Belushi and Chase and Aykroyd hanging out, and there wasn't that much of it. So it's all on the internet. You can look it up, of course, but not too much of it. And so you're suspending your belief that you're watching a kind of adaptation of what really might or might not have happened. But the J.K. Simmons cameo, that's worth the price of admission as Milton Berle.
Don Pardo, trying
yes.
to figure out how to
yes.
pronounce
Don
his
Pardo.
Name.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just an iconic voice for
yes.
sure.
Yep.
Well, Matt, this is one that I will get to see,
okay.
I am sure. We have a trivia question
All
that
right.
is related to Saturday Night Live.
Mm.
One of its guest hosts has won 3 Oscars. Who might that be?
Oh, boy. A 3-time Oscar winner as a guest host?
One of the guest hosts of SNL has 3 Oscars to her credit.
To her credit.
2 for Best Actress and 1 for Best Supporting Actress. She won Best Supporting Actress.
Hang on.
Kramer.
Meryl Streep. I got
you
it.
You got it.
I got
now,
it.
Matt Olien has been to the movies again with all of us here at Prairie Public. Matt, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Heard the music? That must mean it's Thursday, and it's time for our weekly review of the news with Prairie Public's ageless news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you, and ageless, I appreciate that.
I'm going to think of a new adjective every week, Dave, to bring you on the show. Dave, we'll start with a little bit of good news today. ExxonMobil has donated $100,000 to the Out of the Ashes Disaster Relief Program. It's too bad they had to do that, but they stepped up. Tell me what that's about.
They did step up. Remember all those wildfires out there that consumed hundreds of thousands of acres in northwest North Dakota. And, you know, the oil companies were affected as well. Some of them had to shut down oil wells for a few days, and that cut back on oil production. But ExxonMobil has a good footprint in the Bakken, so they said they want to help their neighbors. So they put $100,000 into this Out of the Ashes Disaster Relief Program. And it's being run by the North Dakota Stockmen's Association, North Dakota Stockmen's Foundation. They're putting up the rules about how you apply for it if you are a rancher or a producer out there, and they're hoping to get the money out sometime after the first of the year to help.
Certainly that help is needed by some, so it's good that they are there. Dave, MSU Moorhead and Moorhead Area Public Schools announced a partnership that sounds like a pretty good deal if you want to be a college student coming next fall.
That's for sure. It's a free tuition program called the Moorhead Scholars Program. And what they're doing is trying to keep high-performing students in the community by offering a full tuition guarantee at MSUM, Minnesota State University Moorhead. Now, this is going to be for graduates of Moorhead High School. You have to have at least a 3.0 grade point average, and you have to agree to stay in Moorhead. So they're going to try to keep people in the community as much as they can. And it's kind of an offshoot of that whole Minnesota Promise campaign where they were talking about free tuition for Minnesota students overall.
Dave, the governor's housing initiative is making a little bit of progress. It's still an issue, certainly, in our state. But what's the latest there?
Well, the latest is they've got this task force. The task force came up with some recommendations. And what they've done is that the governor is going to look at putting some of these into his budget request that we're going to know about sometime in the early part of December. And there might be some incentives to get people to build more affordable-type housing, because that's the real issue. Is affordable housing is at a premium in North Dakota.
Dave, I always wonder about this. And in fact, we're going to have a guest on a week after next talking about housing in North Dakota. And one of the issues that always comes up is everyone thinks, boy, we need more affordable housing until that affordable housing is built next to my house. Is that an issue that pops up in the state?
It does pop up in the state to an extent. But there is a real, you know, there's a real awakening, I'm thinking, what we want to call it, of the need for housing as we've got more people moving to North Dakota. For a long time, North Dakota was losing population. Then along came the Bakken, and all of a sudden, we've got population growing again in North Dakota. At one point, we were the fastest growing state. And of course, you know, basically, housing is at a premium itself, and affordable housing is at even much more of a premium.
Dave, there was some news about the weather and drought conditions. Of course, we had a very wet midsummer, but then we haven't had much precipitation since. What is the latest about drought and North Dakota?
Well, the situation has not improved very much. There's been some dribs and drabs of rain, but there's still dry conditions out in, especially in northwest and west central North Dakota. We've had a number of grass fires. But we're not alone. There has been grass fires in eastern North Dakota, too. I think everybody is starting to look at moisture deficits again, and that's not a good issue. But, of course, winter could bring some snow, and that could help recharge things for the next growing season. But does it help right now? Well, you've got a number of states in North Dakota that have red flag warnings because it's too dry, or out-and-out burning bans. You cannot have open burning.
And we hope, certainly, we don't have a repeat of any wildfires like we had in western North Dakota a couple weeks ago.
For sure. At least 100,000 acres have burned.
Dave, the USDA has granted now $22 million to Standing Rock to improve broadband access. That's a lot of money that should do a lot of good.
Should do a lot of good because you're going to be connecting some individuals, some farmers, some schools, some businesses that have not had this broadband connection. I know USDA is part of a group that in the federal government that's trying to get more broadband access out, especially to rural areas of America. And so Standing Rock is going to be a beneficiary of that. $22 million is going to help a lot. And you're talking about, you know, area of the state of North Dakota where there's a lot of distance between houses, between towns, and between farmers and businesses. So this is going to help bridge some of that gap. But I found it was interesting when the USDA representative came out and said, here we are, it is the year 2024, and we're still talking about getting people connected to broadband access. So we're not alone.
Dave, I think this is an issue that rural states, especially in the West, have dealt with and tried to make improvements in relative to rural internet access. So it's happening all around. Good news that there's $22 million coming to those of the Standing Rock tribe here in North Dakota.
Right, that is very good news.
Dave, a report has been issued relative to teacher retention in the state. Had a lot of good points in it. Might have fallen short in one place, and you'll tell us about that.
That's right. A lot of good things like providing access perhaps to childcare for new teachers in the school setting. That's one of the good things about it. And they talked about respect for not only students, but teachers as well. Teachers have felt sometimes that they have been disrespected, and that's because of the national political climate. What the one thing that North Dakota United and their president has said was possibly missing from the report is talking about compensation. And his point was that, you know, teachers may be lured away from the profession because they can make some more money other places as people are looking for workers, especially in North Dakota. So that may be something that the legislature will have to take a look at again when the report is given to the legislature and then they deal with that.
Dave Thompson joins us each and every week here on Main Street. He's the legend. Dave, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Gather around, everybody.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, pleased to be joined by Kenzie Olson. She is a senior at Fargo North High School. Kenzie, welcome to Main Street.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are chair of the Fargo Youth Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me what that is.
Yeah, so Fargo Youth Initiative is really the representation of the youth. We are available for the mayor and commissioners and really anybody in that works for the city to come down and hear youth input.
And what sort of input have you given folks?
We are really here to do topics and opinions and really dive into things that we think that the youth will benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
So this past January, we worked with MLK Day at the Fargo Theater, and Fargo Youth Initiative helped out with that because Fargo Youth Initiative decided that diversity and inclusion will be a main topic that we're talking about this year.
Mm-hmm. So you have this thing coming up now. Tell me about it. It's called Impact Fargo?
Yes, Impact Fargo. It's for all Fargo high schoolers to come down to City Hall. We're having three main topics: mental health, educational justice, and youth homelessness. And students will pick the breakout sessions that they would like to attend. We have an opening speaker, a well-known speaker, Fred, and then a closing panel with the mayor and city commissioners.
So it's on Tuesday, October 29th.
Mm-hmm.
Begins at 9 o'clock. How do kids get out of school?
Yeah, so when they register to attend Impact Fargo, there is a section stating that parents have to parent request their student out of it. And we worked really closely with the principals, so we made sure that students wouldn't have any punishments for after school activities.
And you have a keynote speaker, Fred Edwards.
Yes.
Who is he?
He is a well-known speaker in all of Fargo and maybe even West Fargo schools. He comes into our schools. He's really good at getting kids engaged and interactive with each other. He works with Fred's dissonant.
What would you tell me is the big issues that kids think about relative to the whole greater community of Fargo? I mean, generally speaking, it's who are we going to meet after school and what are we going to have for dinner and
mm-hmm.
what are we doing Friday night, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but there are bigger issues that you're thinking about.
Yeah, so like I stated, our three main topics, and we really are pushing through these main topics because not only are they affecting our country, but they're also affecting the community in Fargo. We look at even just in our schools how many homeless kids we have in high school, middle school, even elementary school. And how
do you know some homeless kids in your school, Kenzie?
Yeah. In school, there's so many things that our school does to help out the population. So obviously there is them there. We have like our open door and donations for that. The Booster Club really helps with that at Fargo North. My mom is a principal, so she works really closely with getting kids to school, making sure that they're able to stay at one school, with going foster home to group home and everything like that. So it's definitely an issue in our community.
When you visit with city councilmen, you have had a chance to do that, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
What are they thinking about? What do I need to do for youth in this community? What's on their minds, do you think?
Yeah, their minds is really to get youth to stay in Fargo. What can we better Fargo for the youth? What can we do for tomorrow to get our generation of tomorrow to stay? So that's really their main topic, and that's why the panel is such a good idea, because not only is the mayor and commissioners hearing feedback from the youth, but they're also taking that feedback and doing something with it.
So in your eyes, getting ready to maybe go to college,
mm-hmm.
what's most important to you relative
yeah.
to whether you might stick around here in Fargo or
mm-hmm.
see what someone somewhere else is all about?
Yeah, so what's important to me on like where I live is understanding the community, seeing what the community is. And I can just tell in Fargo, we are a community-oriented community. We really care about others and we want to help others. We can just see that in our schools. So what that really does and what that shows me is that I want to stay in Fargo, but Fargo has issues that, of course, they need to work on, which is why these topics are so good to have and why events like this are so good to have.
If you were going to market me, and
mm-hmm.
I was maybe a sophomore and I went to Davies.
Yeah.
What would you tell me? Why should I participate?
Yeah, you should participate because obviously everybody's thinking it, college resumes. What can I do to better college? So that's one. Secondly, what can I do to get involved in my community? That's another thing. Like I stated, the MLK Day, we got involved with that. We help out with that. Fargo Youth Initiative was able to attend a presentation from a guy in Wisconsin about homelessness, and that's why we chose youth homelessness. You've learned so much about not only what's in Fargo, but what's happening around Fargo, even like in Wisconsin, for example.
So one more time, Kinsey, tell me about the event on Tuesday, October 29th.
Yeah. So Impact Fargo, again, for all Fargo high schoolers to come down, learn about these topics, get collaborative with kids not only from your school but other schools in this district, hear from great speakers that are well known from city and community, and really understand and learn more about what you can do and speak up and speak out.
Kinsey, if I wanted to register, what would I do?
FargoND.gov/ImpactFargo to register, because you have to be a registered to attend our event.
And is there a cost to attend?
No, it's totally free. The only reliability is to get excused from school and find your own transportation.
Kinsey Olson, she is a senior at North High School. Thanks for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is Dakota Datebook for October 24th. The first official offices of the State Historical Society were located in the basement of the original Capitol building. The rooms were described as small and filled with various mementos and records of early days, souvenirs of the pioneer, and other curios, all compressed into limited space. These items were referred to as records of inestimable value, stacked in heaps in places around the State House where they were constantly exposed to the danger of destruction by fire. This was especially concerning since many people smoked freely in the Capitol building at that time. A study was conducted, and it was recommended to the legislature that a modern three-story fireproof building be constructed to house the collections. After World War I, North Dakota, like many states across the country, sought to create a memorial for the men and women who had served in the military. The Bismarck Tribune reported, "Some states have in contemplation the erection of costly and imposing monuments. Such commemorative structures are well enough in their way, but for our state, a plan has been suggested that is just as good in terms of commemorating the past, while also being continually useful in the future for all the people as a public ornament and treasure and as an instrument of education." This proposed memorial became the Liberty Memorial Building, which would serve as the second home of the State Historical Society. It was intended to honor those who served and to preserve the history of the region. As noted, a great amount of historical material will be brought back to the state by our returning officers and men of the Army and Navy, as well as by those in the Red Cross and other connected services. We should not allow such material to be scattered and lost for want of ability to accept and care for it. Today, the State Archives holds many remarkable military-related records, including letters written home during World War I and World War II. Nearly 1,700 interviews with men and women who served in the military, from World War II to Afghanistan, through the Veterans Oral History Project, a diary and sketchbook kept by a man who was a POW during World War II, as well as photographs, papers, and newspaper reports. Now, the State Historical Society is working towards adding a military museum, memorializing the history and memory of all, as was envisioned in 1919. Today's Dakota Datebook, written by Sarah Walker. I'm Ann Alquist.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
We hear from voters in a Pennsylvania county that has a reputation for picking the president in each election.
It's difficult for people in the middle class, if you can call them middle class anymore, to get a leg up.
Plus, a new film explores a political battle to pick a new pope. We speak with actor Ralph Fiennes, star of Conclave, tomorrow on Morning Edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for this edition of Main Street, a Thursday evening edition it is. We are grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central, we'll air The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. Jeremy will discuss the question, do you trust the polls? And at 7 p.m., of course, we'll air Science Friday. Next week on Main Street, it's Debate Week. Each day, we'll air one of the debates the Prairie Public has hosted this election season. Monday, it's the race for the U.S. House of Representatives. Tuesday, North Dakota's race for the U.S. Senate. Wednesday, we'll replay the North Dakota gubernatorial debate. And Thursday, we'll replay the debate we hosted about Measure 4. Thanks again for joining us here on Main Street. We hope you have a wonderful North Dakota weekend.